Bears Reclaimed, a Microsoft Office 365 MVP who knows practically everything there is about Office 365. He does stand-up events talking about Office 365. He writes about Office 365 on his blog site, and he does in-person training sessions and training videos about Office 365. There's also me, Mark Keane. I'm the voiceover guy and producer of this podcast. I'm also a Microsoft Azure technical specialist, PowerShell extraordinaire, and IT consultant, helping people move to the Microsoft cloud and consume it by helping them to make sense of it. This is a Need to Know podcast with Robert Crane and Mark Keane. It's all about the Microsoft cloud.
Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and again, from the other side of the microphone, I'm joined by my co-host, Mark Keane. Welcome, Mark.
Hello, I'm fantastic, Rob. How are you going?
Not too bad. We can't complain. There's lots and lots of new stuff coming in my Office 365 world, and obviously I see two with the Azure, so Microsoft's back on the gas, I suppose, and now rolling out more and more products and more updates, and it's great to see, because now there's always something to talk about here.
Yes, there's quite a few changes, actually. Did you want to maybe kick off with one of your Office 365 news items?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest thing which I just saw overnight is that Microsoft has announced that it is extending the voice conferencing, basically the dial-in PSTN conferencing to Australia, which means that thanks to Skype for Business, you can run a meeting and you can soon, from September the 1st, have people dial in via a normal PSTN line to participate in that conference. So again, we're getting to the point very much like the GoToMeeting environment. And I suppose the big one everybody is waiting for is the PSTN connectivity, so the ability to make normal landline calls directly from Skype for Business, which I'm pretty sure is not far away now that they've announced this feature. So that's going to be a big feature and I think drive a lot more people into the adoption of Office 365, as well as give resellers a big opportunity to go back to their customers and upsell that option.
So I was at an Office 365 roadshow with you, I think, late last year, and they pretty much said the same thing. It's coming soon. So Microsoft's version of soon could mean like up to 12 months, possibly. But is it actually coming soon? Is that actually fair dinkum?
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft have announced conferencing, so they've obviously put pen to paper on the web and nominated date being the 1st of September. I think one of the delays we've seen is probably because it's regulatory, which means Microsoft has to go through the process of becoming a telco in Australia, because it's doing obviously a lot of telephony now with Skype. And I think the other thing we need to factor in here in Australia, we've just gone through an election, which means, you know, all the politicians get distracted because they've got to run around and get votes. So that's obviously put it back a little bit, but I would suggest to you that we should see the PSTN connectivity probably before the end of the year. I would be fairly confident at this stage, because generally now that we've got the conferencing, the PSTN connectivity is normally the next thing to come. But again, we're all speculating here, we don't know for sure, but I'd be pretty confident to see that we'll see it before the end of the year.
Hopefully it'll come, yes, before the end of the year for sure. That'll be awesome when it does come.
Yeah, it's going to drive a lot of people to it, make it a lot easier for small businesses, and again, give us this unified communications, which we've been looking for a long time. So I think it's a huge opportunity. And again, we're going to see a big upswing, I think, in Office 365 driven by this PSTN connectivity and the new features added for Skype.
Well, definitely, because, I mean, the place that I'm working for at the moment, we've got Office 365 for everything except for Skype for Business. Skype for Business we host internally. The reason for that is because the PSTN calling, we've got our copper coming into the building, into the server. Then we can make phone calls over Skype for Business. We can receive phone calls. People can dial into meetings, all that sort of palaver. So I think we, too, are waiting for this to happen. So when it does, we can then migrate our Skype for Business users. And it is quite an easy migration, because it's not really much to it. And we can start using the cloud product instead of hosting it on-prem, because we did have an issue with it the other day. And the person that put the Skype for Business servers in is not around anymore. So trying to fix the issues, had to log a job with Microsoft and work that out. So there's all of that sort of stuff you've got to remember too. If it does break, you've got to fix it yourself, whereas running in the cloud, it just works. And most of the time, there's no problems.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a big benefit of the cloud, as we know, minimizing the complexity. I mean, we look at something even like SharePoint, which is typically now a farm installation, multiple servers, getting that running. It's much better to offload that to Microsoft and, again, give all the benefits, but without all the overhead. So, again, when we see Skype for Business move into the cloud PBX world, we can configure it, run it. We've got a couple of videos that I've come across that show you the functionality, because it is released in the US. I think it's going to be, you know, really, really impressive what it can do. And having that single identity across your login, across your, you know, files, your emails, and now across your phone calls is extremely powerful, and it's going to be enticing to a lot of people. And I don't know a lot of other providers that can do it. I think that if you were a dedicated VoIP provider, then yeah, you might have to certainly consider your business direction once Microsoft gets into full swing with this.
So here's something for you. If you had enough data on your phone, where these days you do have enough data on your phone, like I've got, I think, 14 gigs on my plan, but I pay a little bit for it, and most people have probably minimum a gig. For voice, I mean, it wouldn't take that much like video does. I'm thinking, like, when this does get released, you can open up your Skype for Business app on your phone, make all your phone calls over the internet through Skype for Business.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's going to give you that ability. It'd be interesting to see whether perhaps they have fallback. So if the data is not good enough, or the opposite, maybe voice is not good enough, it goes to data. But doing it all through data and running it through the Skype for Business service is going to give you far more analytics, far more tracking, audibility, that sort of thing. So I think that's the benefit. And we're definitely moving to a world where it's all about data. We're certainly see that telco is giving away their voice services for nothing and charging for data. But you're right. I mean, you think about a 4G and the 4G Plus and all these technologies, there is really no reason why voice can't be carried over that as well. And then we get all the ability and all the advantages of that when we obviously run it through a service like Skype for Business. So, yeah, I think going down the track, that's what we're going to see. I mean, the main thing it's missing, obviously, is the PSTN connectivity, so it can connect to normal landlines. That's sort of one of the last pieces in the puzzle when it comes to the unified communications. Once we've got that, that's a really, really powerful option when you think about it, and again, something I'd certainly be looking to subscribe to myself, because I can see the benefits even for a one-man band.
Well, see, the other thing as well is how it's going to play out on your actual phone, because I've got Skype, I've got Skype for Business, I've got telephone calls. If I'm on a Skype call, depending on what make and model your phone is, if you get a normal phone call come through at the same time while you're on a Skype call, depending on how it handles that, some phones just drop the Skype call and basically the phone rings and you pick that up, like treat that as a priority, whereas other phones treat that a little bit differently. Now, it's going to be interesting to see how they get that right, because if you're on a Skype for Business work call and a normal call comes through and that cuts you off, it's not going to work too well.
Yeah, well, again, it depends on the client. I think that Microsoft's working hard to make sure that the clients obviously do what needs to be done for the majority of people. But don't forget, this is not a new world. They're obviously running this already in places like the US and in the UK. So when it does come out to us,
it'll be perfect.
Nothing's perfect. You and I both know that. But what we'll get is, again, we will see that we're not sort of going to be the absolute guinea pig for this. We'll certainly be hopefully early on to have the option. But again, don't forget that not everybody's going to jump on this straight away. Not everybody that I see is actually using Skype for Business at all. They still struggle with actually getting it up and running and doing meetings and Skype to Skype calls and that stuff. But I think the big impetus is I see a lot of resistance in the market. Oh, I don't want to use Skype until it's perfect, until, like I said, it's got PSTN connectivity, blah, blah, blah. So again, I think it's just another barrier that's removed, and it's going to allow more and more people to really seriously consider the Office 365 and Skype for Business as a solution for the telephony. And again, when you combine it with everything else the suite offers, it's beginning to make, you know, even more sense.
See, it is good living in this country. That's one of the advantages. Like, it obviously gets tried and tested overseas first to the masses in the US and the UK, and then hopefully with any luck. See, I'm an optimistic type of person. I'm hopeful.
Well, obviously, Obviously, you must be a person that runs around playing Pokemon then, because Pokemon was released to Australia before a lot of other countries as well.
Never.
Oh, dear.
Actually, speaking of optimism, here's the thing, right? You know, like, everybody's got a mobile phone these days and a mobile phone number, and you can, like, since, I think, 10 years ago, you could port that number across. You'd pretty much keep the mobile phone number for you for your entire life. Now, with this Skype for Business thing coming out in the cloud, potentially you can get a normal O2 number or an O3 number or like a landline number and keep that with you for the rest of your life. So people can be carrying around two numbers, a mobile phone number plus your landline number at the same time.
Yeah, and again, that gives the company the ability to allocate those numbers out. So it can allocate a range and do all that sort of stuff. It's got far more control over its telephony without the need to, like I said, implement on-premise servers and worry about all the SIP connections, all this sort of stuff. So I'd be interested to see how it plays out. There are obviously going to be some kinks that need to be ironed out before we get it, you know, I suppose, perfect, as you say. But I think, again, the big takeaway here is that, it again, demonstrates Microsoft's commitment to rolling this product out and also making all these services available. So again, if you step back and think about it, something that the big end of town have had for years and years and years, but look at a small business, you know, one two-man band or a startup, look at the technology that they can have access to for a very small monthly cost. So I think that's the big enabler we're going to see, is more and more people from the small end of town are going to jump on this and use it as their telephony solution through their business.
Yes. All right. Now I'll.
So what about some Azure news? Eh? Let's Azure do some Azure news for those who are dying for that.
July 14 saw the release of the Azure usage and billing portal, which is a new portal that's come out to support, you know, the APIs that were released last year, Rob. You know, the Azure resource usage and rate card APIs.
One of the biggest questions that a lot of people have is around the billing and how to manage and maintain that. So, yeah,
that's good. That's exactly right. And like, for developers and stuff, maybe it's a walk in the park, but for the general folk out there who sort of don't sort of get the whole API part of it, well, the fact that now it's in a portal on a single pane of glass, you can manage and you can see all of your Azure subscriptions in one hit, which I think is definitely a welcome change, because it's one of the biggest questions I get is, hey, we got no view of our usage. And the fact that now they're saying that you can, like, if in case you forgot to leave a bunch of virtual machines running and powered on in the cloud, being billed per minute, now you can pretty much see them off the bat, like, straight away on this this monitor on this the portal. It shows up in 100%, and you can see it straight away. So you can definitely be alerted to it, and you can definitely have more visibility into what you're using in Azure. So I think it's definitely a welcome change.
Well, I think it's a big, again, billing is the big thing that most people have confusion about. Making it simple, putting it in a portal. I suppose the question I has, it would be nice, I would think, if you could bring that sort of stuff into Power BI. I mean, is that something that would be on the roadmap?
Well, funny to say that, it uses Power BI to display all the pretty graphs and charts, so you can set it up in minutes, and it's on it's all part of GitHub. It's an open source project, and if you want more information, it's on my blog site at markkeen.com. we'll put the details in the show notes, but we've got a link which basically takes you through to more information.
Cool. All right. Well, like I said, I think that's, again, another really handy feature, and pumping it into Power BI makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, pretty cool. What else? What else we got in Azure World?
Announced at the Worldwide Partner Conference, GE, General Electric's, predicts industrial software. They said it's going to be available on Azure. It's big news. It was the big announcement that happened. Now, predicts is already hosted on AWS and Oracle already, so having it on Azure means that now Azure can stay competitive. Predix is a, in case you don't know what it is, it's a software platform for the collection of data from industrial machines. It does industrial scale analytics for asset performance management and operations optimization by providing a standard way to connect machines, data, and people. So that's that came out, and Azure's pretty much very excited about that announcement. Again, if you want more information on that, it's on the blog, on my blog site, and details in the show notes.
All right, well, let me throw some more 365 news at you there.
Hit me.
The other thing that the other thing that Microsoft has recently announced is something called Bookings. So Bookings is initially being released to business premium plans, so typically the smaller business style customer. What it basically allows you to do is set up a calendar booking system that you can make available to external parties. So again, they use the example of, you know, a dog washing salon where people can go to this site, they can then book an appointment for you. That appointment then is emailed to you, added to your calendar, as well as sent to the person that made the booking. So the most interesting thing, I think, and anyway, we'll put the notes of this, the links of this in the show notes, but when I read the blog post, if you could scroll down to the bottom and you have a look at the comments, the majority of people say, well, when's this going to be available to all other plans? So Microsoft's obviously targeting the SMB market initially, but then obviously there's going to be huge demand for this as well. And personally, yeah, I could really use something like this in my business. So again, another feature that Microsoft has added into the Office 365 suite. At the moment, again, only available to first release on the business premium plans, but hopefully rolling out to everybody very soon. So that's Microsoft Bookings.
So the other use case for that, I'm guessing, is next time I need to, let's say I got a sore tooth. Let's say I want to make a dentist appointment at 2:30. Do you get it? Do you think that's a good time to?
Yeah, look, I think it's. Yeah, look, I mean, it certainly could be used for that, and I think it's only limited by your own imagination. Certainly aimed at scheduling external bookings for businesses. And again, even if you think about it as a personal thing, if you basically were able to push your personal calendar to an area where the people could look at it in public, obviously securely, and then they could pick and. They could choose times that would suit you. So yeah, look, I think there's lots and lots of options, but initially Microsoft are obviously aiming it at businesses that do need to make regular bookings with external parties. And it also combines with like products like Find Time from Microsoft as well, that allows you to find a common time between obviously a group of people when it comes to making an appointment, use that quite regularly. So I think again, what we're seeing here is the focus on productivity, and now Microsoft's, you know, effectively got the platform in place. And again, if you could imagine the bookings, the extension of the bookings in the Skype for Business. So imagine, again, we see many websites that say, you know, when you go on there, you know, click here for help or chat with this operator immediately to get questions answered. I can see that Microsoft bringing that sort of thing, thanks to Skype for Business connectivity to PSTN lines, again, directly into things like bookings. So again, we're beginning to see this ability to integrate all these products together and really provide some great solutions.
All right, so on my side of the fence, Microsoft Azure Storage Service Version Removal Update. It has nothing to do with Azure Storage, however, more so to do with the REST APIs. There we go, there's that word again, APIs that I was using before. The APIs that control Azure Storage, which is also what the Azure PowerShell module uses and everything else. They all leverage the REST APIs. And also, too, I've noticed myself with the Azure PowerShell module, changes with stuff like account type, SKU, and like accessing storage keys. With the latest version, it's different the way you do it, because obviously it hooks into the latest REST API. So in other words, what's happening is they're trying to they're basically updating the backend API version for the storage stamp in Azure. It's probably not going to affect most people. However, if you've got applications running in Azure and stuff like that, they are extending this out. However, they are eventually going to stop support for this older version of the API. So it's a good reminder and best practice to always use the latest and greatest tools with Azure, and also the latest version of the API, and stay on top, because things do change, and all of a sudden you'll wake up the next day and possibly your application may break because the API version is no longer supported.
Cool. Oh, well, again, that's always a good message to make sure that you're up to date. So, again, what we've got here from the Office 365 world is basically we've got a new product rolling out, or an add-in, I suppose, to Word called Researcher. So the idea here is that rather than just being a thesaurus or a spell checker, it can actually go in and do a lot more, I suppose, rules around grammar. It can help you find information, do citations, that sort of thing. And again,
this is in Office, right?
Correct. It's an add-in to Word.
Yep.
Again, think of all those assignments that you've written, and you can go in and, you know, check the citations and check the grammar. And again, it's using machine learning in the background when it's connected to the internet. So that's pretty cool.
Yes.
Have a look at that. The other one is, I don't know if you've seen this, focused inbox and at mentions that you can now incorporate in your emails.
I don't like what Microsoft have done to the emails. Actually, on the subject of focused emails, I've actually turned that off on my Android device. I did have the Outlook app on my Android. I turned it off. I didn't sort of see benefit to it. But the other part of it is the clutter. I know the clutter's been around for a while, but I find when I'm looking through my email, there's nothing in junk email. Everything's in clutter. Clutter is like the new junk email folder, but yet what I find is a lot of the good stuff that I want to get is going to clutter. And even if I drag it back, I understand it learns. So even if you drag it back to the inbox, after a while, if you start to ignore those emails again, bang, it goes back into clutter again. So it's like a complete, like you're constantly fighting against it and constantly battling, trying to get it to train it to, hey, don't move certain messages to clutter.
Yeah, well, I think part of it is that, you know, what I see is not very many people have implemented or know how to implement outbox rules or inbox rules when it comes to using their Outlook. So everything gets delivered to the inbox and then they get overloaded. So again, you could make the argument that because people don't do this, you know, the machine learning is doing its best to try and move the...
Is that what it's using? Machine learning
basically
for the clutter?
Yeah, it uses machine learning sitting in the background looking at, you know, obviously your interaction with the emails when you open them, how long you take to open them, all that sort of stuff. So again, far from a perfect system, and the more that you use it, the more that it learns. But I think part of it is it just depends on the way you work. For a lot of people, it probably works very well, but you know, others like yourself, maybe not so much. I think that again, it's an extra tool that you can use. It's up to you to make the most of it, and certainly you can turn it off if it provides you no value.
It is handy. I mean, like, you can sort of get all the, like, as in clutter, out of your inbox. But the thing is, you don't always remember to check clutter, and all of a sudden there's one email in there which has gone there, which you've actually, somebody sent you something, they've never sent you anything before, and it just ends up in clutter. As I said, like, it's the new spam folder. So and I find
that could certainly happen with junk mail as well. I mean, like I said, it's not a perfect system. And I think, again, the idea here is that it's a tool that's been made available. You can certainly use it. It's up to you if you want to take advantage of it. You can turn it off. But again, if you think about it, again, the majority of the time, again, don't focus on the endpoints. Look at the majority. I think 80 to 90% of it does a pretty good job, really.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, when you talk to people these days now, they say, oh, I just sent you something. Just check your clutter. Like even general conversation, clutter is the new spam.
Well, it's good. It shows that people are picking it up.
People
so, again,
Office
I think...
365.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So another thing that Microsoft have introduced with PowerPoint is this idea around Zoom. So the idea with Zoom is that you can nominate a region, click on a region in a PowerPoint, and then it sort of like drills into that area. So it becomes a bit interactive, like a web page. Many people are pointing to the functionality being very similar to Sway. So they're sort of saying, well, is Sway going to merge into PowerPoint? I think that, again, the way Microsoft seems to be working with these products is they... have a consumer-focused product as well as a business-focused product, an enterprise-focused product. That's certainly going to be PowerPoint, and it makes sense to bring common features or worthwhile features between the two. So if you have Office on your desktop as part of your Office 365 subscription, you will certainly be getting all these new features very shortly, and it's up to you, obviously, to have a look at them and make use of them. But again, think people who do a lot of writing, again, the research is a really good option to have a look at. For those who want to obviously keep stuff out of their inbox and just focus on what's important, again, we've got the focused inbox. And finally, for those who are using PowerPoint and want to create something that's a bit more interactive and a bit more dynamic, then they can look at this, what's called Zoom for PowerPoint.
I reckon it'd be the other way around, possibly. That's just my take. I reckon PowerPoint could eventually mold or merge into Sway, just because, like, the way the world's going with everything's changing to the cloud, the way I see it at the moment, I think Sway is more of a online cloud version, and PowerPoint still you can install on your computer.
Yeah, I think I, the, again, similar. I think that Well, I think the thing is you find, you know, for certain things, the PowerPoint will do the job. It's a bit like Outlook. You know, we've had web-based email clients for a long time, and again, a lot of people still prefer their Outlook. So, again, right tool for the right job. If you need the low-level detail and the power, I suppose, to go in and really create something on the desktop, then PowerPoint's there. But again, the reality is most presentations don't require that level of involvement and can be done much quicker and much easier just using a tool like Sway, where you throw the content in there and it automatically arranges it, makes sure that it conforms to the right display rules, and then it makes it easy to nicely to rearrange if needed. So again, you don't have to use a tool like PowerPoint for everything, and the simpler the job, then maybe Sway will do the job, will provide the ability to do that. And I think Microsoft is giving us a range of products to do that, whether it's Sway, whether it's OO, whether it's Outlook. I think that's the way to go, and I think that's the way to cater to the majority of the audience. So use the tool which makes the most sense, and don't forget there's a fairly steep learning curve when it comes to using PowerPoint, with any sort of skill. There's a lot in there. Most people only use about 10 or 20% of the product. So yes. Again, keep it simple, and you get the result that you're after.
Actually, just on that, Microsoft PowerPoint presentations lately have gone from here to here, as in from level 5 to level 10 all of a sudden. I don't know if you've seen the latest PowerPoint presentations, like if we use like the Microsoft Mechanics show on Channel 9, the MSDN Channel 9, those PowerPoint presentations they do, with the animations, the background animations, yep. Light blue, they yep. are fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that a lot of this we're seeing is this is what's capable for most businesses and this is what we can achieve. So, but again, to get that sort of functionality and to use things like Morph in PowerPoint, which allows you to seamlessly move between sequences, I suppose, does require a bit of knowledge, a bit of playing around. And some people just aren't into that or haven't got the time to do that. But the tools are there. That's the main thing. If you do start digging around, and same with Azure, same with Office 365, I mean, they're infinitely deep, and most people unfortunately don't use anywhere near the capabilities. So I think the takeaway for a lot of people is to just go back and have a look at what's available, and again, you might find some features that can really help your business.
Hey Rob, listen to this.
Yep,
that's opportunity knocking. I think there's a perfect opportunity to do some videos on how to do the morph and the animated backgrounds and produce like today's state of the art presentations and slides with PowerPoint. Like as you said, like most people only need to know how to use the 5 or 10%, but to do the rest of it, I mean, I'm guessing it's so easy. But if you can do like a series of short sort of videos on how to, that would be.
Well,
definitely
I think part
beneficial.
Of it is Microsoft certainly has some of those videos that give you the overview, but making it easy. So learning how to do it, and then the step by step process, but I'm sure that there are videos out there, and like I said, I certainly could do them myself and put them up there if we get time to get that. But I think that's the big thing here, is that these features are available, and again, I'm sure there is some tutorials out there on how you do it step by step. So again, take advantage of those.
Alrighty, my side of the fence. Thanks for the ball you threw over there. The Azure portal has had a tiny little change. Well, it's quite a nice little refresher. The Azure Ibiza portal now has all the enterprise integration features all under the same spot. It's called Enterprise Integration. Now, if you go to the marketplace or the menu, if you go to the menu in the portal, you'll see Enterprise Integration in there. That's all grouped together of the enterprise features like Logic Apps, API Management, and Service Bus, etc. Prior to that, they're all sort of in different areas, so they've grouped them all under a more of a logical name. So again, it wasn't a very a massive big thing when it came out. But it's definitely there now, so it's definitely
I'm disappointed that you haven't covered my favorite Azure application or service that's now gone general availability.
Jeez. Your favorite Azure service, you mean virtual machines?
No, my favorite Azure service is Logic Apps.
Ah, yes, Logic Apps. That has gone GA'd, but not everywhere, though. That's why I haven't covered it. It's only in, I think, North America.
Yeah, so again, come on to the flow on into Office 365. But basically, Logic Apps allow you to build automation processes by linking typically the APIs. We could do that in Azure for a while. It's been obviously in preview, but now it's gone general availability. So, for example, you could do things like if something is updated in CRM, then output a file or then write something to a list. And this is typically done in Azure, which obviously is a bit technical for many people. But what we're seeing is effectively is these Logic Apps are now flowing back into Office 365, and they have been, I suppose, named Microsoft Flow and Power Apps. So Flow gives you the ability to create these automation sequences, and Power Apps gives you the ability to create very simple applications that will run on a mobile device and will allow you to push information back into Office 365. So what Microsoft recently announced was that they have now integrated SharePoint lists into Flow and Power Apps. So what we can basically create, for example, is a Flow or a Power App so that you create a little app, put it on your device so that when someone's out in the field, they enter information into an app, a dedicated app, and then that information would end up back in a SharePoint list, and then you can act on it and take it and obviously transform it into anything that you want. So again, Power Apps and Flow are something that is available with Office 365 and basically give you the ability to automate a lot of sequences, but also create dedicated front-facing applications that will then feed the information back into locations in Office 365 like SharePoint lists. So for example, the one they have on the site here, which we'll put a link to, is, you know, when a new item is created in a SharePoint list, then obviously go out and get your Office 365 profile and then send an email to you to indicate that a new item has been added with all the information about that item in the email for you. So a lot of basic automation tasks or basic tasks that businesses perform can now be automated using the Microsoft Flow. And again, if you want something more sophisticated, then like I said, migrate or have a look at the my favorite Azure service being Logic Apps.
So I was wrong. It's actually available G8 everywhere, not just North America. So definitely check that out. I think I was getting confused with the next part here, which is only available in North America. It's Azure AD B2C is G8 in North America only. However, I'll just quickly mention it here. B2C, Rob, do you know what it stands for?
Yep, business to consumer.
Correct. It just basically means that as a business, you can have an app made from your developers, and then you can allow access to consumers, like as in the general public, to use a business app, logging onto it by using their existing social media accounts, that are allowed at this point, Facebook, Google, LinkedIn, Amazon, and the obvious one, you know, like it's a Microsoft account, the good old Microsoft account. Or consumers can create their own app-specific accounts, which are stored in Azure AD. So that's generally available in North America. Also, too, Okay, Rob, this is it. You ready? Drum roll, please. I reckon this is probably the biggest news come out. And there was, like, a sort of a mistake in this announcement back in AzureCon 2015. I was adamant. I heard something announced by Microsoft where they said that there'll be an SLA for a single virtual machine coming out by the end of 2015. In fact, Aiden on Twitter, I forget his last name. Aiden Finn. That's it. He's I think from Ireland. He's an MVP. Correct. He came out on Twitter and basically said the same thing that an SLA on a single virtual machine will be out by the end of 2015. There was also an article online about it as well. I tried to go back and find the video. I couldn't find it. I think the presenter obviously said something that was incorrect, and Microsoft's covered it up. However, it's been announced officially. It came out as an email through the email announcement through Azure. It looks like the upgrade domain is going to be wiped out. So the upgrade domain is pretty much going to be disappearing altogether. Most virtual machines now benefit from an Azure in-place virtual machine migration. There we go. The live migrations are coming. It only pauses them for about 30 seconds, worst case. So remember, worst case, up to 30 seconds, could be 5 seconds or anything else. The temporary disk and memory state are preserved. Virtual machines already benefit from this capability for certain critical security updates. And with an upcoming platform update later this year, Microsoft will eliminate the need for the dreaded virtual machine reboot for most host OS patches. Azure's long-term goal is to eliminate the need for virtual machine reboots for all host OS updates. It's fantastic news, Rob, because single virtual machines out there, I can give you a list of a whole bunch of companies who are running production workloads on single virtual machines that don't currently have an SLA. So that SLA announcement that got announced last year, like it was very, very early. I think it is coming now. I wouldn't say it's 100% coming, but if you read between the lines, it's definitely it's on the way, and it's going to improve reliability for single virtual machines.
Yeah, well, that's a big thing, especially in the smaller end of town, is the ability to make sure that the virtual machine has that sort of guarantee of uptime, even though it should be obviously load balanced or have redundancy. So many businesses today run single service, and they have that expectation that if they move it into the cloud, that it will be up 100% all the time, will be 100% redundant. It's at the moment, as we stand, it's just the same as a single server on premises. So having that sort of ability is, again, another incentive to move a lot of the infrastructure into the cloud, making, again, the migrations nice and easy as well, by the sound of it. So, again, big bonus. And I think all kudos to Microsoft for, you know, obviously taking the feedback and trying to make that happen for those.
Oh, it would have been a challenging feat for sure. I mean, you imagine like thousands and thousands of hosts and like times 20 of that virtual machines on top. It comes patching time, and they patch the hosts. They've got to live migrate all those virtual machines from one host to another. Look, realistically speaking, like doing a live migration with Hyper-V, there is pretty much no downtime at all. You move the virtual machine from one host to another. I mean, worst case, as it says there, it could like pause for up to 30 seconds, but realistically, you probably notice no downtime whatsoever. Now, I will actually say this is, yes, it's going to iron out the upgrade domain altogether for the virtual machines. There will still be one other domain left, which you've got to like keep an eye out. Do you know what that's called, Rob?
It's been off the top of my head.
Fault domain. So it's not going to like prevent you from experiencing that. The fault domain, it basically means like if there's a fault in the rack, like the top of rack switch or the power distribution unit down the bottom of the rack, it's all single points of failure. Your virtual machine will potentially go offline for up to 5 minutes until they move it across and it comes online in another host in another rack. So it's definitely a step in the right direction. Now, the other thing that was announced as well is VNet peering for Azure Virtual Networks is currently in public preview. In case you don't know what VNet peering is, it allows you to have two different VNets or virtual networks in the same Azure region and link them. It means that virtual machines in each VNet can easily talk to each other without the need to implement fancy gateways. It works seamlessly. Peering also works across virtual networks in different subscriptions. And between ARM, Azure Resource Manager, and ASM, Azure Service Manager, virtual networks. It doesn't work between two ASM virtual networks, but I don't think you'll ever get to that. I think with this news, you're probably thinking, yeah, well, what's the point? I can think of many, many, many use cases for this. For example, if you're an IT service provider or you've got like a whole bunch of devs with their own, you know, like MSDN subscriptions in Azure, you've got your own credits through Microsoft, through different like Gold Partner plans that you've got the credits through that and things like that. So you'll have a whole bunch of subscriptions like we do, which we can't make use of, but now we can actually set up virtual machines and virtual networks in those other subscriptions that we've got through our credits. And we can link them to our production subscription, and we can get some uses sort of that way. So I think it's definitely it's definitely a good thing. And people have actually been asking questions as well, is this coming? So yeah, it's in currently in public preview at the moment, VNet peering, which will be a nice thing, and I think it's going to be very, very popular.
Okay, so the last bit of Office 365 news that I have for today is around the new Office, basically 365 network online community. So Microsoft had a number of communities around Office 365 for resellers and end users that they could contribute and share information. That was currently, that used to be totally hosted in Yammer. It worked fine, no issues with that, but Microsoft have decided to move that into its own dedicated network, the Office 365 online community, network online community, and that provides forums, feedback, that sort of thing. And the idea, main idea here, is that Yammer was a private network, which meant it wasn't indexed or searched. So if people needed help with Office 365 and ran a search, it wouldn't show up, obviously, because it's restricted inside Yammer. Moving that across to a public network is going to make that more available. There has been plenty of contention around people using the network, how different it is from Yammer, what Microsoft's thinking is Yammer going to be closed down now that Microsoft's done this? So the answer is that Microsoft is using this network as a public-facing source of information. The Yammer networks will remain. Yammer will remain as typically a private network for individual companies. So when you get Office 365, you get your own Yammer network that you can certainly use internally and share with others, but it is private, remains private to you. So, and we'll put some links in there to give you access to that and Microsoft's announcement. But if you're in Office 365, I'd certainly recommend you go and join that network, have a look around. There's certainly going to be a wealth of information around Office 365 to help you implement and use the product better. So we'll certainly make that available and encourage people to get involved with that.
So it's like an online community in like a real-time chat community sort of thing for Office 365.
Yeah, it's just basically like a message board, and it, you know, again, but Microsoft have moved it from a Yammer network to a private to a public network, so that all the information is searchable and is available through the search engine. So again, you think about the wealth of information. So the network, the Yammer network, had about 100,000 mm-hmm. users on it, so 100,000 people using a Yammer network. So there's a stress test for you. Mm-hmm. Think of all the information they're generating, all the content, all the good little nuggets of information, but that wasn't available on the internet because, again, the Yammer network wasn't searchable. By moving it to a public-facing network, which they've done now, means that that will become available. So certainly encourage people to get in there and have a look at it and start contributing, and expect over time for that to really grow to a huge information source around Office 365 as more and more people opt in and share, you know, information around the product.
So is it the public network they're using? It's Yammer still, isn't it?
No, it's not. They're basically using a completely different environment because obviously they want to scale it out and want it to have different features and work more like, I suppose, a public community board rather than being a private social network. So again, Microsoft have taken the
Facebook.
yeah, basically they've taken the initiative here to re-engine or retool it and focus it, mainly on the public facing side of it, where again Yammer is dedicated for internal or within a business network. So again, they're slightly different networks, but again, different features.
Maybe they did a contra deal. Maybe they gave Facebook a good deal on Office 365. In return, Facebook gave them a good deal on Facebook for the public network.
Yeah, I think they're not using the Facebook side of it. It is a completely different piece of software, but it needs to obviously conform to, you know, those sort of social networking rules. Yeah, exactly.
And the other...
Anything else from you from Azure?
I was just going to say the other thing that I'm working on currently at the moment, and the other thing which I'll just mention too, I think is it's one of those parts of Azure which people might not have used before, and it would, once they start using it, they'll see the benefit. It's OMS Log Analytics. If you're a horse better, if you're betting on a horse that's going to win the race, definitely bet on this one because I think it's definitely up and coming. It's going to be huge. Just to give you an idea of what it is, in a nutshell, it's like a cloud version of SCOM. So you know what SCOM is, don't you, Rob?
Yep, System Center Operations Manager.
Correct. And that's more like monitoring and alerts. So OMS, Log Analytics, is like the cloud version of that. In fact, the agent that you install is the same agent that you use for SCOM. So it pulls out all the logs and everything else. Now, just quickly, stuff I was looking at yesterday, you can look at sort of custom logs on any machine, Windows machine and Linux machine. You can build alerts across it and reports on it. There's dashboards on it. You can do graphs and all sorts of things. So watch that space. There'll be plenty of more good stuff to come. We'll talk about it in future podcasts. But I definitely think that that's going to be the way of the future, is because it's all going to be run from the cloud on the Azure platform.
And also, don't forget that if you do want to see or hear us talk about particular topics, I mean, you know, maybe Operations Manager is something you want to hear about, or maybe more in depth on Azure or some of the features in Office 365, don't be scared to let us know, provide us feedback. You can do that on the iTunes. We always appreciate reviews on iTunes, as well as getting in touch with us directly to let us know what you think about the show. So I think that's probably a good point at which we need to wrap up this episode. There's plenty of stuff that we've covered, and also plenty more stuff coming, so stay tuned for the next episode. But if you wish to get in contact with me, the best option is on the Twitter at DirectorCIA, and stay in touch with what I'm doing at my blog, which is blog.ciaops.com. And what about you, Mark? How do people keep in touch with you?
It'll be Twitter or my blog site, which will be in the show notes, but the Twitter is at Mark Keane. So it's MarkKean. And my blog site is markkean.com. It's nice and easy.
Yeah, that's what you like. You basically, when you're a superstar, you get to register your own domain, don't you?
Well, see, it was a bit of an odd spelling name. Most people have M-A-R-K, and Keane is spelt like four different ways. So having markkean.com available, and I did buy it not just yesterday, I bought it like a few years ago, but the fact that it was available, I thought was pretty surprising, which was good. So yes, I've got an odd spelling name, but it has its benefits.
Excellent. All right. Well, I think that's all from me. I think we'd encourage everybody to make sure that you tune into the next episode, as well as any past episodes, get in contact with us, read our blogs, and also let us know the information that you do want us to cover. I think with that Mark and I need to return to the world of the cloud and dive back into Office 365 and Azure and get on with that for the rest of our day. So I think with that, I thank everybody for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.